not a palate cleanser, more like a palate defibrillator. You know, just a just to completely shock myself out of the stupor of some of the music.
I quite enjoyed two of the albums this week.
There's no point dragging it out. Tell us about your albums, Mr. Beasley.
All right. Let's start with
the albums, so you better fucking like them.
Well, these were... So, I have been a little bit more conscious in trying to get a bit
after
more,
dark. Continue.
Yeah. Trying to get a few more female voices.
This is you being performatively woke, I realise. Mm. After being shamed into it by somebody else. Luckily, I'm not as shallow and easily easily pushed off my fucking message.
I think I must have just trawled through the Discover Weekly.
Trawling
or
for women, were we?
And let's start with Dream Wife.
With Dream Wife. You gotta say Wife like it's like a threat.
So
backstory to these kids.
Yeah.
They formed they're art students from Brighton University. And they formed this band as almost like a joke, as sort of, because it was meant to be part of an art installation they were doing, like a student project they were doing. And then they just kind of carried on with it as a band. So three girls from Brighton Uni. I say they're of sort of idols and inspirations are Bowie and Madonna.
Oh, really? Because I got a real Divinyls vibe from this.
Nah. Divinyls?
Hang on, I'm just going to...
You're going to go and listen to some Divinyls and come back?
No. Who's Chrissy Amphlett singing?
Yeah.
Oh, just the vocal. Her voice.
Chrissy Amphlett's Swedish?
It's just the tone, I guess. I don't know. That's what I picked up on it straight away.
So the lead singer is... I'm not sure what... I don't know if she's Swedish, but she's definitely from some part of Scandinavia. She must be an international student or something like that. But she sings with an accent, and it's very... it's very obvious, isn't it? But it's part of the artifice. It's part of the art of the singing. It's almost like... it's almost like Björk doing an impression of Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, because that's the kind of I suppose vocal feel she gives. It's kind of deliberately offbeat and staccato and almost like throwing shapes with your voice. It's kind of an insouciance and sort of an arrogance to it, the way she sort of throws the lyrics around.
Yep. Yeah, I think maybe that's where I've got it from. It's just that I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Sort of up front in the vocal.
I've seen a long line of female vocalists like that. I suppose...
Yeah.
I was always thinking the Divinyls were a fairly conventional Aussie pub rock band. I think I'm probably more hung up on the musicality differences, because this feels like it's more in that kind of Yeah Yeah Yeahs... even say the Greats from Brisbane.
The Greats is a good comp that I...
And Le Tigre, which was one of Kathleen Hanna's follow-up bands.
Didn't make at the time.
Le Tigre, which was one of Kathleen Hanna's follow-up bands after Bikini Kill, certainly has a little bit of that riot girl kind of feel to it.
I don't know. You know, I'm terrible on influences, but I found it hugely enjoyable. Really enjoyed this album.
I really enjoyed the first song, Let's Make Out. I thought that was really... It had a lot to go for it. And I listened to it and thought, this is great. It's really going somewhere. And then it failed to go anywhere for the rest of the album. It's just a bunch of aimless, pretty-sounding twiddle. A lot of jangle pop that kind of... I could see... I was like, where's the songwriting? There's no actual hooks. There's nothing actually to bring you along. And it always kept bringing me back to this idea that they were inspired by Bowie and Madonna. But then I thought about that a bit more carefully, and I figured out, I think I know how they were inspired by Bowie and McDonough. Because those two, above a lot of other artists from the 70s and 80s, put the aesthetic above everything else. It was all about how you looked, how you appeared, and what followed musically wasn't necessarily secondary, but it wasn't job one. And as art students, aesthetic over everything is exactly what you'd kind of expect. You know, they're out there to fucking do it. This band is still an art installation. They're out there to present themselves. And if, as you'd expect, if you go and look at their band page, their band photos are immaculately curated. Every single one of them is done to kind of send a particular fucking message. They're not great songwriters and they can't play particularly well, but their band photos look fucking tremendous. So they nail the aesthetic. Art students, eh?
Art students. So what about...
So what did you... I mean, I've kind of damned with Frank Pays this... With Frank Pays. Damned with Frank Pays, folks, which is something from Scandinavia. Damned with Faint Praise, this album. What did you like about it? I don't want to take away your oxygen when you're actually...
No, no. I was actually thinking about this on the drive home listening to this album, where I get into this sort of mood where... And this is the problem with only listening to an album for a week, I think, is when I find it fun and enjoyable and I sort of switch off and don't analyze it. I just sit there and enjoy it. And I don't think it's till you go back and sort of listen to it over and over again for a while that you start picking it apart and I think sometimes when you don't like an album, it's a lot easier to pick apart quickly because you don't go through that phase of just listening to it and having fun and enjoying it.
I absolutely agree with that. I think if you're not enjoying it, you quickly, while you're sitting there in the first or second listen, you're knowing, well, I don't, yeah. that's weak. Or that. I don't really think they did a great job there.
And I don't think I got past that phase because, like, I was just like, I really like her vocal. And that was probably the biggest thing I took away from it was I liked her vocal.
It is unique. There's some interesting choices been taken there. The problem is I'm not sure how much of it is sort of happy coincidence and how much of it is deliberate fucking confection. You know, they went, right, we want to be a right girl band like Bikini Kill were, or like, we want to be weird and funky and have this kind of air of Scandinavian weirdness like Björk. So
I didn't get the Björk feeling from it. I have to say, I didn't like it as much as the next album.
I probably listened to a lot more, I've listened to a lot more Scandinavian people.
Yeah.
Because I watch a lot of rallying and all the co-drivers are from Finland. So they all sound like this woman.
Mm.
So fair the next enough. Album so, is from a band who are aficionados of punctuation. The Go! Exclamation mark team. Why did they go with the exclamation mark and not like an interrobang? Because that would have been more fun.
I have no idea. But
can I just go out on a limb and say, look, I'm not a fan of weird punctuation in band titles. I mean, fucking Godspeed You, Black Emperor, can fuck off, as far as I'm concerned.
What about ch-ch-ch?
Yeah, they can fuck off
just,
too.
Just all punctuation.
I think my issue is with exclamation marks. I think there is a band that's literally called Fuck Off with an exclamation mark.
I've got a little sort of thumbnail sketch of this band.
The band on my release radar was called Dead! Exclamation mark. And they're probably
and you just went, fuck off. Because I know nothing about this band, right? But
I know
this
marginally
band,
more because I'd heard of them and I knew they had an exclamation mark. The end. Did you read their bio on fucking Spotify?
No, I have not read their
bio. It's useless. It's just like a list of, like, these are a few of my favourite things. It is... you know what? Let's do this live because it is fucking nonsense.
I want to tell you my thumbnail sketch of this band before you tell me, because I might be completely wrong and I might be bang on. So this band, right, reminds me of a really talented high school band.
Holy shit! That's exactly where I was going to go with it. Yes. But you know, why? I think there's some specific musical choices and cues they made to make it sound like that. But yeah, keep going.
Because they sound like a band that plays in a concert band, right? Because I played in a concert band.
Yes.
And you have all your mates.
It sounds
play
like they recorded this
weird,
at a fucking Stanford.
They have all these weird instruments, like, you know, brass and glockenspiel and everyone. But
badly
then
mic'd,
you get.
But almost deliberately, like mic'd from the back of the room, so they sound like, and they're always a little bit sloppy. So it very much sounds like
there's a bit of deliberate sloppiness to this. But the other thing is, but you can get that sort of style, and it can just sound like a high school band. But then if you get a bunch of people that like a lot of cool music, but then have that musicality of a concert band and are actually really good at playing instruments, you sort of get this weird fusion between making interesting pop music, but still with that high school concert band aesthetic where you have to have, you know, bits of, you know, like, it's not guitar and bass and drums. It's, you've got to have some brass and you've got to have some keyboards, and you, because that's what they play in the band, you know, and it's almost like the friendship group defines what instruments are used in the band, less than trying to write songs decides what the instrumentation is. I really liked this album. I thought it was really interesting, and there was some stuff in there that just I'm keen to dig into later in the year and see whether it holds up.
So their bio. Mm. This is their bio. Lasers through tracing paper. Orange tone oscillations. Cable access hangover. A KTEL dream sequence. A haunted vision
totally
mixer. Station wagon
totally
call. Straight to video.
Band.
Something in the fog. Fluff on the needle. Chroma key constellations. A hovercraft on the fretboard. Faxing a car alarm. A Morse code pep talk. Etch-a-sketch jackknife. A daily Halley's Comet. Mm-hmm. Light sound. Color motion. A holiday from yourself. CFAX taking. Oracle. Second sight, summer camp, 360 degree tunnel vision, Chinese whispers by post, the opposite of hula hooping, the geometry of ideas, maxing the Minute Maid, teleprompter for your dreams, carry the 10, pathways in patchwork, getting gay with kids is here.
They wrote their own bio, didn't they?
Yeah, posted by the Go team. The earnestness is just punishing on this album.
I didn't think you would like that part of it.
Absolutely feels like that episode of South Park where the school group came and the performers came and the activists who wanted to try to save the rainforest has that kind of just the peppiness that just for a cynical Generation X guy like me just makes you want to rip your own fucking fingernails out and sharpen them and use them as weapons. It was funny because at one point in that fantastic, in one of those fantastic interviews, I think it was the Vulture one that Quincy Jones did, he said the Beatles played motherfucking Sesame Street music. And it made me think of this album because this album is Sesame Street had fantastic music, really well done music, but it was relentlessly positive, obviously, because you're writing songs for fucking 5-year-olds. And yeah, this does feel like even with the motivational titles, like it's one of the songs which is called Plans Are Like a Dream You Organize, which is just fucking neck yourself. Just go to fuck.
This album is way too cheerful for you, isn't
it? Oh, fuck. This album made you want to kill people. it's kind of twee. It's catchy in places.
It is very twee.
But it's fucking annoying for a lot of it. And at one point they use the sound effect of ping pong. Ping pong is a sport for people who can't play anything bigger. And so is brass. It's instruments for people who can't play anything better. And I had to listen to a shitload of concert bands who were bad. Playing bad shit out of tune and out of time in my years. And this album didn't make me feel good. I know that it probably gave you a lot of lovely nostalgia, but it certainly didn't make me feel good.
Whereas I listened to a lot of good concert bands. And
no, you didn't. You listened to a lot of concert bands. There were no good concert bands. You listened to concert bands that you were in.
Yes, well, the only time I listened to good concert bands was when I was
pretending to play but not playing so that I wasn't ruining the music. So, but I like this album. I like this album, and I think I will like this album when we get to shortlisting albums later in the year.
I look forward to never hearing this album again in my life. She's Got Guns wasn't a bad track because it didn't sound like anything else on the album. It sounded a little bit like Salt and Pepper, which is not something you expect to do in that sort of space.
There was definitely an eclecticness to it too. It sounded like a 10-piece band where while they all sort of had the same influences and they sort of played the same stuff, there was, you know, some push and pull in what sort of things they wanted to do. But it is relentlessly cheerful, I have to give it that.
Yep, it can fuck off back to the fucking school spectacular. Say no to drugs, kids.
Mm.
So, right. You hated Thriller. Why did you hate Thriller? Is this an art versus the artist deal? Or is this a just it's so dated by what it is? Or
okay, so when we go back and listen to some of these older classics that I didn't listen to the album in full.
No, because like we were, never, well, four. When they released this, I was four. So, you know.
Was it?
1982.
82, yeah.
So you would have been five-ish?
Five, yeah.
Maybe, depending on what time of year it was released.
Because I was thinking... I'll get to a bit later on. But, yeah, so you obviously know the singles because they've been, you know, they're pop. Pop culture, they're in the bedrock of society.
Well, they defined fucking the opening of MTV, and they were on. I mean, I was thinking, where did I see the film clips for this thing? ABC used to play them in afternoon television. That's where I remember the first single on this album that was released was the one with McCartney, the duet with McCartney, and that's my earliest recollection of ever seeing a film clip. Now, it was released in 1982, so I would have been four years old, and then I remembered it. I remember the song.
Yeah.
I didn't remember it being quite as shit as it is, and it is. So, fucking, it's a shit song. And that's actually interesting when I looked at the Wikipedia page for Thriller, and the album initially got kind of panned because of the terrible first single, which was the terrible ballad with McCartney.
Beat It, Billie Jean and Thriller are the ones that I really, you know, know off the... And I still like Billie Jean.
And I remember Billie Jean's Beat It as a film clip when it came out as well. And I remember Weird Al Yankovic's cover of it. And this, I mean, the reason this album was interesting to me to go back to was because of the fact that it's some of my earliest memories of music.
But the rest of the album is terrible, rancid fucking pop. Really fucking bad. Not. There's no redeeming features as far as I'm concerned. It's just shit pop. Like this album gets held up as one of the great albums in music, and man, that Pretty Young Thing, it's made me want to stick my fingers down the throat. I just did not enjoy listening to this album, other than the three singles that I liked, and they were so beaten into my, you know, I knew them so well that there was, you know, it was like listening to the radio. There was no real enjoyment from listening to them. I don't know. I found the off-single tracks on this album were pretty fucking bad. What I wanted to do was go back and listen to Madonna and Prince, because I remember growing up watching Rage, you know, probably not five, but, you know, 9, 10, 11, and Prince, Michael Jackson and Madonna just dominating Rage. In my, you know, sort of really young years, that was where I got my music from, was Rage. And I listened to the Prince and the Madonna albums around the same time.
1982.
You know, because it... I think it was 1984 and 1986.
The Prince album's a bit weird.
Which one are we talking about? Because I was looking at this thinking, with Prince and with Michael Jackson, they're almost like a little bit of like a Stones Beatles thing, where the safe bet was to go with MJ, but Prince was always more like the Stones. They would tend to be liked by the more edgy sort of people, and my abiding memory of them is more in that kind of, well, just to go quickly through what he, I mean, once Michael Jackson got free of that fucking, his record deal with the Jackson 5, which basically meant he couldn't go solo until like the very late 70s. He did Off the Wall, which was his first solo album. That was a lot more kind of funk and disco. It was more of a continuum with what they'd done with Jackson 5. Then he did Thriller, both of those two with Quincy Jones. Then was a bit of a gap of about 5 years, and he did Bad. And then he did Dangerous in 1991. And that was about, obviously, about the time we're fucking listening to a lot more pop music.
Yeah,
and,
so it was...
And fucking Prince has got that massive album out at the same time.
Diamonds and Pearls.
Yeah, literally
Cream.
Diamonds and Pearls. That's the name of the album. And I always felt by that point of his career, Prince was owning Michael Jackson, whereas earlier in his career, Michael Jackson was owning Prince. So it was almost like he'd been able to get over. And by the middle of the 90s, both of them were fucked, basically, because Prince was in a bad contract and Michael Jackson was running from...
So Prince's issues. Album that year, because for some reason, I must have got the years wrong on Spotify. So 1982, Prince's album was 1999, which is 1999, Little Red Corvette.
That's a good
Delirious.
Album.
That's a fucking really good
album. Solid
album.
But in 1980, what did you say? 94. He must be doing 1986. He did Sign of the Times, which is apparently his. You know, it's critically acclaimed as being his best album. That and Purple Rain, which was his 84.
Yeah,
album.
Well, Purple Rain was 84. So you know, Prince is knocking it out of the park. Then I just want to see what Madonna.
But he's not selling anywhere near as well. And Madonna.
She was a little bit later. I think.
Yeah.
82 would have been.
82 would have been too
early.
It would have been fucking. Celebration or something. Did you do Celebration or was that Kylie Minogue? She did Holiday. You know, Holiday, Celebrate, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, whereas her peak's probably...
Erotica, late 80s,
maybe?
Early 90s. I would have
Erotica,
said the one
92?
Before. Because that was yeah.
No, one before was I'm Breathless, which is the... Probably 89, Like a Prayer.
Yeah,
like a Prayer, Express
yeah, that,
Yourself.
That
Cherish.
That was controversial as well as, but there still had big pop bangers on it. It's funny in that period, both Madonna and Prince probably overtook Michael Jackson.
84 was Like a Virgin.
No, it wasn't.
No,
it literally wasn't.
That's what Spotify says, and then 83 was Madonna. Like the original Lucky Star, Borderline. It's still not a bad album. Holiday, Physical Attraction. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
like,
Material Girl.
Did you? What did you think of the non sort of?
I'm Breathless was the fucking Dick Tracy soundtrack because she was in that.
Yeah. Yep. Which is not that great.
Like a Virgin was. I'm getting like a Virgin and Like a Prayer mixed up. A True Blue.
Yeah, Like
was,
a Virgin was 84. Material Girl, Like a Virgin.
Yeah. I'm getting
Pretender.
Like a Virgin and Like a Prayer mixed up. Because
yep.
like a Virgin
a
was
like
controversial,
90s.
But Like a Prayer was even more controversial because of all the Catholic shit.
Yeah. Yeah, there was lots of film clips where religious people got very angry.
Lots of problematic and unhappy people. But then there was Erotica with the coffee table book that went alongside it.
Yeah.
But you played that shit pretty well. I mean, but that's the problem. You got to, as we kind of alluded to with the fucking, with the I was going to say Perfect Wife, Dream Wife album. The aesthetic is almost more important than the fucking music itself. And even today with Beyonce and Tay Tay, all the stuff that goes around the music is more important than the actual music itself. And always has been.
So what did you think of the actual music on
the
Michael Jackson album?
I'm not as stridently against the X album tracks, but I do think Off the Wall is a better album.
Yeah.
I enjoy that kind of disco funk rootage.
See, I was expecting a lot more funk for the off single ones.
Yeah, it's
and it was real R&B pop, really poppy.
But this is before R&B pop existed. This yeah, is the, I mean, you got in mind that you're judging it against everything that followed, and you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You always do this. You're like, this 1982 album's terrible because it sounds exactly like the crap that they were making in 1998. It's like, technically they were first.
Well, no, yeah, but this makes it worse because this is what fucking, this is what spawned fucking terrible R&B. So.
Well, yeah, that's one way of putting it. But I actually find that, so they're almost like two pairs of albums, Michael Jackson's kind of... We'll call it his 80s output, although one of the albums was in the 70s, one of them was in the 90s. You've got the two albums at the sort of 79, 81 album, and then you got Bad and Dangerous at the end. And Bad and Dangerous are very, very... He almost turned into a caricature of himself, and the instrumentation became incredibly 80s. It was a lot of fucking, you know, that kind of very 80s synth and very 80s percussion. A lot of dang, dong, dong, that kind of shit. I actually got a note here saying, Dangerous, it's bad but worse, which is literally true. Redefinition of the name. It was almost getting into kind of 90s R&B things, but he was very clearly getting lapped basically by Prince, which is why he moved away from having Quincy involved. I enjoyed the nostalgia hit of thinking back to them being the origins of music, and I think some of the tracks on this album are really good, like Wanna Be Starting Something's a really good song. But, yeah, it's not, I wasn't around in 1982, and to be around in 1982, you'd need to have listened, if you were a pop music fan, you'd need to consider it in the context of everything that was coming around before 1982 and everything that followed. But obviously, it's very clear that it doesn't hold up as a great album in 2018. Very, very clear that it doesn't hold up in that respect.
Yeah,
and of course, there's also that art versus artist thing that's really hard to get away from, and we've seen that quite a lot recently. Whether it's with Michael Jackson, whether it's with fucking Quentin Tarantino, who is obviously a massive cunt, and we've always known, but now there's evidence. But basically, any 70s rock star from fucking Gary Glitter to Jimmy Page, even fucking Shaun White, the fucking snowboarding dickhead. The ginger snowboarder who's, you know, all Americans going, yeah, you're winning all the gold medals. Meanwhile, he's had to settle a fucking sexual harassment lawsuit where he was showing, you know, sending dick pics and being a complete creep to some woman. It's like, it's really hard to dislike, like, how do I enjoy the thing that you make or the thing that you do without celebrating the thing that you are, which is a turd? And yep. We're never going to get past that.
No, but... I thought I went into this album going, I'm looking forward to this. This
no,
is going to be
did
great.
Not.
I did.
You did not.
I did.
You can pull the tapes from last week.
When I sat down to listen to it, I thought this is. I actually thought I was going to get a real slice of. I thought I'd get a slice of funk. That's what I thought.
Yeah,
and
off the wall.
I did not, and maybe that's why I react against it so badly. Is because I went in anticipating, you know, getting a bit of old school funk, and yeah,
no one was doing old school funk.
It's an 80s album. That's right. Yeah, it's not a 70s album.
It set the template for 80s albums, just like Def Leppard Hysteria, and it kind of set the template for all that kind of overproduced soppy end of hair metal.
All right, what do you got for me that is a newer?
Well, as you know, I don't follow fashion, and I don't accept people outside the podcast dictating to us what sort of music we should and shouldn't be listening to, even if it has been a massive fucking sausage fest. So my albums for this week, one is by a band called Bat Fangs, who are a hard out rock and roll band. That happened to be two girls. no, they're kind of a bit hard to describe, but I know I pick a lot of rock bands, but this is a different rock band to the last ones and the ones before that. And the other act I was going to pick, so I can't remember what Bat Fangs album was called, but it might just be called Bat Fangs.
It is called Bat Fangs.
Yes, it is. It has kind of a Batman-style logo on it.
Mm.
I think these guys are... These girls, if I remember that right, they are a side project of a side project of a side project of a side project that goes back to fucking either Kathleen Hanna or Carrie Brownstein from Sleater-Kinney. So that's kind of the... But it's like the more it's the more fun side project of a Sleater-Kinney person. So it should be good fun. And it's sort of... Let me have a look here. Formed in 2016 by guitarist singer Betsy Wright and drummer Laura King, the duo specialise in prescription strength shred and churn, meant to stiffen the upper lip and crack the third eye. Okay.
Sounds like your sort of music.
Slick and sick visions channeled from the midnight mirror world. Acid-soaked hard rock to thrill the living and raise dead. Fuck. Look at more balls than I do. And the other band I was going to throw in was... every year I listen to the Triple J Hottest 100 just to see if there's anything I've missed that the youth are into. And I turned up a band from the Illawarra called Hockey Dad, which is also a two-piece, but the difference is it's dudes and it's not acid-soaked hard rock. It's probably sort of less
Blend
acid.
Blend In is the name of the album?
Yes.
As in, quite a lot. In as in where
as
you
in
drink
hotel.
Beers.
As in hotel, yes. I feel like they were kind of laid back, kind of surf rock. Not quite Jack Johnson, but I think that they're kind of more down that end of the market. So we've got a we've got 70s pop, sort of pop metal band, and whatever the fuck Hockey Dad are. But they got a song in the Hottest 100, so good luck to them. What is your alleged classic of this week?
Well, it's a newer classic because I feel like I've been mining the 90s a little too much. This was an album where I heard the single and went, I really like that song, but I expect to listen to the album and sort of quickly lose patience with their sound, I guess. And that's MGMT's Oracular Spectacular from 2007. Did not really... I sort of went into it sort of determined not to like the album and then really like the album and have continued to like it over time. So haven't listened to it for a couple of years since, or pretty much since we started doing this, I guess. So I'll be interested to see, going back to it, having sort of, you know, processed all the music that we processed in the last couple of years. You know, I really feel like my tastes have changed. And that's what I found really interesting about the Ice House album, is how much I liked that Ice House album, despite the fact that, you know, I feel like I've really warped my musical tastes the last couple of years. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting revisit. Has some cracking songs on it.
I'm not hopeful.
You know enough about them to know that you're not hopeful?
I don't trust anybody in management. You want some sort of fucking strategic review, when you? They fire all the useful people and retain all the jobs worth.
Sounds like
MGMT were kind of... That was the period where they were big, and then they just fucking disappeared.
Have a new album out this year,
I think I listened to this album in period and thought it was Toilet, so I'm looking forward to seeing whether I was right. Because that would have been the period where I wasn't... Obviously, I wasn't listening to Triple J, and I wasn't getting a lot of new music. I was kind of people talking about stuff on Twitter or on fucking the internets. Like, oh, what's this MGMT album like? And you'd listen, like, on fucking iTunes. They'd have, like, the preview where you could hear, like, the first minute or so of each track. And be like, oh, this isn't me at all. But it's a this is a classic album. You've said it is. So if it's not...
I've been wrong before.
Well, you just you just give me an opportunity to fucking roast you for an entire episode, which is either way I win. Either I hear a new classic album, or I get a free kick, and that's fine.
It's on the t-shirt.
I'm not going to kick you in the t-shirt and kick you in the ass. What ass are you for?
I will talk to you next week.
Yeah, I guess you will.
Thanks for coming.
I mean, that's kind of the format of the podcast.
Yep.
Unless,
you know, LeBron gets signed by the Golden State Warriors in the All-Star break and we decide to do an emergency. We've never actually had a big enough music or basketball event to warrant us busting out an emergency podcast, have we?
Popped the trunk one time. I'm sure we did it once. Pop the trunk is the old Jalen and Jacoby reference to just doing a podcast whenever you desperately need to. But no, we're not, the thing is that, I mean, we were lucky the other week because the big trade that the Cavs did happened within 24 hours of us podcasting. It was perfect timing.
I can't remember which pod it was, but we've done one where I've stridently made like four different takes and all of them were wrong by the time the podcast got posted.
Literally, by the time we'd run production and posted the fucking thing, we're like, everything.
It was almost wrong. Like, yep, that's wrong. Yep, that's wrong.
We're going to own this shit. But no choice but to own this shit.
That's one of the joys about music. You can argue against this, but
at least their takes aren't time bound, which is part of the reason why, you know, we can safely release this in midweek, even though
midweek.
Spoilers, folks, we don't record this in midweek. We're actually a few days out from there. Our listening cycle is the calendar week, but our release cycle is kind of midweek to midweek.
In case you hadn't picked up that we're usually a little bit more drunk for the after dark than the basketball.
And also the fact that, you know, sometimes we can't always get your thoughtful comments and reviews in because you'll be talking. You might have listened to an episode that dropped on a Wednesday. We'll be recording again the following Friday, so we won't necessarily be able to capture all that stuff. But we appreciate your input, and I always like the input we get on the socials. So continue to do that if you must.
Yeah. Well, I think we got a few comments about the Turbo Negro on the sub this week, which everyone enjoyed.
And having listened to the episode back to do the sound on it, I'm struck by the line, which was, you know, I've never seen an album this stupid done this clever. And I think that's basically, I think that's really all you need to know about that album. Is that if you want to see stupid done clever, which is basically the motto of our podcast.
I was going to say that's sort of our, you know, like Ugly Duckling format, Turbo Negro.
We're not quite as into massively excessive deviant gay sex, but, well, I don't even think they are either. I think it's kind of, and this is actually something I wondered about. Is that like, I wonder if one day that'll be looked at as like, you know, impersonating a gay person for comedic effect or for entertainment effect. Is that like going to be seen like blackface in the future? I mean, impersonating a minority and as a caricature in order to get a laugh. I wonder how that's going to fly. How long is it going to be before that's not a thing that you should do?
I know Will Anderson's talked about jokes that he's had that he did, not even, you know, when he was first starting out, but like just stuff that he's done and he's like, I just don't want to do that anymore. Like,
shit evolves super quick.
Yeah. Yep, and like, and yet we're still, you know, doing the same there was a whole heap of stuff out about Chappelle this year. How he, you know, shit has evolved and he hasn't, and that makes watching some of his stuff pretty uncomfortable.
Well, there was some trans stuff in there apparently, but he just. I think the problem is that I think he just assumed that trans was a free fire zone because everyone's going to cop it eventually. You know, everyone's going to get you think it, but it's kind of. The biggest problem with trans jokes appears to be the fact that they are literally at the kind of the minority that can defend themselves the least, and everyone sort of jokes on them, and they didn't get a chance to fire back at any stage. Like, they don't get to feel above anybody else. I mean, the thing is that if, as long as you're above someone else, you can feel like you can get a joke off on someone else. But, I mean, it's really tricky. Navigating that sort of stuff. And that, I guess that's why a certain section of the population rebels against that entirely and rejects the idea of deferring to anyone's feelings. But that's how you end up being a complete arsehole.
Yep. Anyway, all right, Doc, I will catch you on the flip side.
You will do that.
See you, mate.
Cheers.
I have downloaded the audio, so I will upload it tonight.
All right, I'll upload this.
I'll talk to you later.
Don't ever pick another fucking Estedford album. That was awful.
I love that album. It was so much fun. It was
fucking terrible. None of the songs were any good. I wouldn't have minded if the songs were any good.
I really expected for you to go a much harder line on that album. I really did.
No, I just like letting you just slowly hang yourself. Did you notice that with the Thriller? It's like, just continue to tell the internet how you hate a super classic album that is still liked, unlike Sgt. Pepper's. There's still people alive who
loved. And I hope I cop it this week because I'm going to bite back hard. That is a fucking rancid album. That is terrible.
It's not great.
Well,
the thing though, that it is consistent with what he does, though. I mean, when I listen to the other stuff, it's like, oh, he's done one of them songs. He's like, he had like, I probably should have talked about this in the app, but he had like, it's not like Cookie Cutter. He has like, look, I'll have three of these types of songs, and I'll have two of these types of songs, and I'll have one of these, and one of these, and one of these. Thanks very much. Do the job. Roll it out. Yeah. And that's exactly what it was. There'd be some couple of upbeat funk numbers. There'd be some kind of slower ballady kind of thing. You know, it would be very by the numbers. And of course, Quincy Jones is a really good producer, so he can do that quite effectively. But I can see how he got overrun by more I mean, I don't feel like MJ was that creative. And a lot of his best songs weren't written by him. They were written by, there was like, who's that fucking Swedish cunt who writes all the songs for Taylor Swift?
Yeah, I
Max
know
Morgan,
you're talking about.
Max Martin, Max something or other. Yeah, so he had a dude like that. He's called Rod Templeton, and he wrote fucking Thriller. He wrote most of those big songs. Michael Jackson wrote fuck all.
Mm.
I feel like we need to put this bit in the episode.
Prince was a lot more responsible for his album.
Well, he could play every fucking instrument he had.
I almost wanted to pick Erotica as my album this week, but I thought, we might need to step away from it a bit,
and I'm thinking that because I also had, I was thinking I should do a Prince classic that I haven't heard, like Purple Rain or fucking
1999.
Sign of the Times, I was thinking.
I own Sign of the Times. It's a good album.
Because when I had a look and I looked at some of the the meta rankings and all that sort of stuff, almost like Rotten Tomatoes for albums, and it always seems like Sign of the Times and Purple Rain are always at the pointy end. Not a lot of love for Diamonds and Pearls.
Oh, I love that album. I
think that album's more important. And you know what? I feel like, in hindsight, I probably picked Thriller because it was the most significant album to me as a 5-year-old because of the singles in it. I think I certainly liked Off the Wall more, and maybe Bad and Dangerous were probably more significant further down the track. But
Diamonds and Pearls came out in 91, so I would have been 14. Can you think of a better album? If you're thinking, if you add the film clips in,
that album just reeks of sex.
Yeah, it's the particularly perfect album for a pubescent boy.
1992 was the year that this fucking, the thing I talked about last week with the high school dance troupe doing the fucking stripper routine. They all had chairs. I think it was meant to be burlesque, but it felt like a stripper routine. So obviously that album is more important to me in terms of albums that were released in 1991 than Dangerous was.
Yeah. All right, Doc, I'm going to edit this. I'll put it up.
All right. I recorded that last bit if it was useful. But
keep it. We might throw it in as a after dark.
Or we'll just keep it running.
Cool.
Until we stop it, which is right here, folks. Good night.
Goodbye.